Welcome to Education Perspectives. I am your host, Liza Holland. This is a podcast that explores the role of education in our society from a variety of lenses. Education needs to evolve to meet the needs of today and the future. Solving such huge issues requires understanding. Join me as we begin to explore the many perspectives of education. Well, we are delighted to welcome Kathleen Penny Christian to our Education Perspectives podcast today. Penny is a native New Orleanian who has called Lexington, Kentucky home since 1992. She and her husband, Claude, are the proud parents of four wonderful daughters. She has been fighting for equity in education for 20 plus years. Penny has served as PTA president at both elementary and middle school levels. She then advanced to 16th district PTA president in Fayette County from 2019 to 2021. She's currently vice president of leadership outreach for the Kentucky PTA. Over the years, her advocacy work at the district level includes serving on the parent superintendent interview committee and parent representative on the district safety advisory council. She has facilitated multiple presentations with school administrators on the importance of PTA and family engagement. One of the most rewarding experiences for her has been being selected as a member of the inaugural cohort of the EdTrust Family Fellowship. In 2020, Penny completed her requirements to become a Commonwealth Institute for Parent Leadership or CIPL Fellow with the Pritchard Committee for Academic Excellence. She was selected as a member of the Pritchard Committee for Academic Excellence in 2020. She also serves as a member of the Kentucky Collaborative for Families and Schools Advisory Council. Penny is currently an NPTA Legislative Committee member, National PTA, and served as a parent or family representative in the Kentucky Coalition for Advancing Education, and now the Kentucky United We Learn Council. That's a lot. Penny, I'm so glad to have you here.
Hi, Liza. Thanks for having me.
For our listeners to know, Penny Christian is an advocate that I admire probably above just about any that I can think of, because she really gets it for kids and for all kids. Penny, you come at this from parent perspective, so we have a little bit of a different outlook on schools. So I like to start out with this question. Why do you think that we as a society invest in education?
You know, that's simple, and yet it's really complicated, right?
Mm-hmm.
We know what the logical answer is why we invest in education. But even those who don't necessarily understand the path that we take as far as advocating for public education, it's stereotypical to say, but it is the door, it's the pathway to everything else, right? When you talk about a successful community or a successful city or state, you have a strong workforce, you have a strong economy. And that workforce and that economy, all of that stems from having strong educational opportunities. Right. So you have teachers who do right by kids. You have kids who are learning. You have kids who succeed and who have aspirations, some who choose to stay and grow into that society and that community. And then you have some who want to just branch out into the world and make the world better. So I think that's really what's crucial.
Good answer. So you can spend your time, and most all of your time is volunteer time, in lots of places. Mm-hmm. What drew you to spending your time in education?
So when people ask me how I started on this journey, I have to talk about my why. My girls are my why. They gave me this for Mother's Day 2 years ago, so they get me. But my second oldest was in elementary school, cripplingly shy child, but brilliant. In a certain class at that elementary school, we had a teacher who penalized her because she wouldn't read out loud. Now, she was in third grade reading on a fifth grade level. But at a parent-teacher conference, the teacher says, she's doing beautifully, but we can't get her to read out loud, so we're going to drop her a reading level. And we're like, no, we're not going to do that. Here's what we're going to do. You're going to let us, as our parents, address why she doesn't feel comfortable reading out loud. And we're going to come to you, and we're going to explain that to you, but you're going to put her back in that high-level reading group because you're not going to limit her, and you're not going to lower the expectations for her because she's not conforming to what you need. What that did for me is it told me that if you have children whose parents are visible, active, all of that, if they have to deal with that, how many families don't know how to address this situation. And that started me on a path to being able to having a desire to want to speak for other families. It's not just advocating for the child. It's a moral holistic approach. You're advocating for that family when necessary, right? So that's how that started. Absolutely.
Wow. It's interesting how school systems and whatnot don't always accommodate every child. And that's one of the things that I admire about you and also share your convictions is that we as parents need to advocate not just for our children, but for all children in the building. You've told us a really great story about advocating for your child. What's a favorite story about advocating for all children?
And you know this, Liza, when it comes to PTA, sometimes parents will gravitate towards you and say, I'm not sure how to do this. Can you help? Would you attend an ARC meeting with me? Would you speak to this? Would you come with me to this meeting where I need to speak to my principal? Whatever. That happens a lot. A certain middle school here in Fayette County, I'm sure there's a wanted poster of me on the front office wall, which is fine. They love me. I had a parent come to me and she had some issues with her child's IEP. She asked me to be a part of her ARC meeting. I said, of course, I'll be a part of your ARC meeting. So you come into the room. I tell the story. I try not to laugh. I walk in and two of the people in the room went, and they started whispering, is that Penny Christian? I was conflicted because my presence shouldn't make you do right. Mm-hmm. You should want to do this without my right. In that meeting, I made it very clear. I said, if I have to come to school and meet with you over every child in this building, I will do so. It's easier if you just do what you're supposed to do in the first place, and then you don't have to worry about me coming into the building, right? When you talk about all kids, and some of my best stories are when certain administrators or certain teachers in certain buildings flag me, because it's like, do you have to call her? Just do right. I don't ask for much. Just do right by the babies and we'll be fine.
Isn't that the truth? And that it just warms my heart to hear it, because there are a lot of parents out there who don't understand how the school works, and they're mm-hmm. fairly intimidated even from the history that they had in school may not have been correct. All that great.
Right.
Yet I'm not sure as many feel the empowerment they need mm-hmm. to feel when they're working with their school. So you've had an opportunity to meet a lot of parents like that. What kind of advice do you give them?
I always tell them, identify your why, right? Every training I do, every individual conversation, if I have a doctor friend, he's a pediatrician, and he'll call me and he'll say, Penny, I got this patient in here and his mom has a concern. Can you? He said, I know you always tell me I can, but can I give her your number? You absolutely can. And the first thing I say is identify your why. What the why does. See, that why you identify is your north. It keeps you on track and it keeps you focused. Even when you don't necessarily know what to say or who to say it to, when you start on that journey, your why drives. It's amazing what that why will do when you don't deviate from that path. So I always tell them, identify their why. And then I say, let's find out who you need to speak to based on your situation, because there's a hierarchy. If your teacher hasn't emailed you about your child's missing assignment, we don't go to the superintendent, right? You speak to that teacher. And then what do? Do you speak to that? To the principal? Do you speak to the academic dean? Who do you talk to? So I tell them, identify their why. And then I tell them, let's figure out what that hierarchy is for your specific situation. And it, usually once you can do that, you can navigate a little bit better. And you don't have to be a 20 plus year advocate in the game to understand how to do that.
Absolutely. And you know, that is such a wonderful clarifying statement. Why do you want to do this type of communication? Mm-hmm. What is it you're hoping to accomplish? I think
yes,
that's actually really brilliant. What do you absolutely love about what you do advocating for kids?
If you had asked me that pre-COVID, I may have had a different answer. But my answer now, I think it's more deep. It's less personal. And what I get out of this is the kids come out better on the other side. And I know that sounds cliche.
No, but it doesn't.
The kids come out better on the other side. Some people don't like to say this. I am a firm believer that when you're advocating, if you don't tick someone else, you're not doing it right. Whatever that target is, whatever your goal is. If everything were going right, you wouldn't have to do this, right?
Right.
So people push. I am proud of the way that I push back. I don't do this to be seen. I don't do this for attention. I don't do this for the glory. But if babies, if something comes out of this and they're better on the other side, if it's a stoplight at a school where someone's been looking for it and it's a big traffic issue, if it's at the legislative level where we need to have more funding for preschool education, whatever that is, if I get it done, then the kids come out better on the other side.
Great answer. Let's talk about that problem solving and maybe conflict resolution piece a little bit.
Okay.
Because I know that in my time in PTA, I had a number of administrators that literally are scared to talk to parents. A lot of times that's because issues have not been addressed in a timely fashion. So by that point, particularly at the district level, they're hearing parents who are shouting at them. That's not necessarily the best way to get things done. So how do you thread the needle with being able to present conflict and make people uncomfortable enough to change and yet not go into having people worry about you walking in the room every single time?
Okay, so I'm going to tell Liza a scenario, because where Penny is concerned and a lot of people that look like Penny, that concern is always there. They always worry when you walk into the room. One of the trainings I do is on implicit bias. I do this activity where I randomly hand out index cards with words on them. Some of the words are passionate, concerned, caring, aggressive, loud, angry, mean, scary. And then I ask the room, now, who do you think which words are for? Because if Liza and I walk into the building, Liza's concerned is a concerned, passionate parent. Penny is angry, aggressive, and mean and scary. I have had to learn. First of all, I embrace that, right? Take me as I am.
Yep.
But if you haven't had a conversation with me, if you have not met me, don't assume. See, that's based on those biases that you have about angry Black women coming in and causing trouble in the building. And I've had this happen to me, because the countenance of the front desk will change and they get a little, I'm just here to have a conversation. What I've had to learn, this is a growing thing for me.
Yeah.
A huge growing thing for me. You go armed with knowledge. You hold all the cards as the parent. I have all the knowledge about my child. You should be willing and open to receive said knowledge. But also, if I have to go to an ARC meeting, I need to know that law. I need to know that IDEA exists. I need to know what the feds say about it. I need to know that if you don't give me what I need, I can go to the Department of Education in Washington, D.C. and sue you. But I can say this in such a way where I'm giving you my knowledge and I'm expecting something in return. Now, I will say that Penny does not always 100% of the time do that. Because just last night, Penny lost it in a meeting. And I don't regret it.
You know what?
I wasn't being heard.
Sometimes it's really what needs to happen. And I think that growth journey happens for all of us.
Yep.
I mean, I think back to when I was 16th District PTA president, I really wanted to activate the parent portion of the PBIS system, which is a behavioral management system, because I thought, what a great idea to have parents using the same type of corrective techniques and whatnot and reinforcing it. And I got, oh, no, this is just a pilot. No, you really don't need to do that and all that kind of stuff. And now I look back at it and I should have said, yeah, well, that's all nice, but it's public information, so I'm going to do it anyway.
It is. And guess what? So, part of my losing it last night had to do with PBIS.
Why doesn't that
surprise? Is that not funny?
Yep.
Yeah.
Well, I guess in a way, that's a good segue to tell me about what you feel are challenges to advocates.
Closed doors. Those doors are closed by choice. I've had so many parents tell me since COVID, well, the principal said we can't come into the building for safety reasons. Let's not use COVID as an excuse. You didn't want us in the building in the first place. And those barriers that we know exist are in part because a lot of people have yet to really embrace what family engagement is. Because at its core, family engagement is a partnership, which means you welcome me into the building. You welcome my voice. You welcome what I have to say. You welcome my assistance. You welcome that partnership. So that's always the challenge. And the challenge is also, you talked about past experiences. Some parents have had things happen to them that I just can't go into the building. I don't have any reason to believe that it's going to make a difference. But we also have had administration who have had similar experiences who aren't trusting anymore of parents. I've heard that as well. When I was 16th District PTA president in August, I sent out two letters. One was to every local unit president, introducing myself. We're going to have a good year. Here's our focus and vision. I also sent one to every principal. I can't tell you how few responded to that email. Didn't change anything for me, but it told me a lot that there was some bridge building that needed to happen.
Mm-hmm.
And I needed to acknowledge some challenges. Everything is not, oh, it's the principal's fault. If I can have a conversation with you, tell me why you don't feel comfortable having us in the building. Tell me how your relationship with a prior PTA president is impacting your relationship with PTA now, because all that stuff comes into play, right?
Absolutely.
So, and at its core, all that means is what? Communication.
And sometimes when people are very passionate about their kids and about their school and all that kind of stuff, that does make the communication a little more
passionate.
Challenging.
Yeah. Well said.
Oh, gosh. So I'd love for you to tell listeners a little bit about your experiences with EdTrust and what you've been doing there, because, you know, people think about PTA and parents is coming into the school and, you know, helping out. But you've really gone on and done some major policy level work. And I'd love to hear a little bit about it.
Yeah. So the EdTrust, actually, I found out about EdTrust through Pritchard, but EdTrust is an organization. It's an education nonprofit in Washington, D.C. They do have branches in New York, North Carolina, and one in Tennessee now. But EdTrust is like this huge clearinghouse of information for equitable education. It's data, data, data. What I love is I could email someone at EdTrust today and say, could you give me 2005 data on third grade reading in Kentucky or Tennessee? And they'll say, give us 24 hours and we'll give it to you.
Nice.
It's amazing. When I did the fellowship, it was the executive director was John King, who was one of the Department of Education under President Obama. And what it was a year-long fellowship, and they called it a family fellowship because what they wanted you to do was understand that family engagement is more than what traditionally people think it is. Mm-hmm. It's more than just coming into the building and making copies and attending conferences, right? So they gave us lots and lots of data. They gave us trainings on how to interact at local, city, state, national level in terms of advocacy, depending on what we wanted to do, if we wanted to go into the legislative aspect of it, how to really do grassroots advocacy. So they would bring us in, they brought us into DC for a few days. It was just two full days, 8 to 5 intense work where we had to do scenarios. We did asset mapping. We had to look at how we looked at the data for our states. And what we discovered was it was Maryland, North Carolina, Tennessee, New York, all the same. So many similarities. So we could come together and talk, but then branch out and talk about how to help our states individually and personally. And I tell people, it's probably some of the most humbling work I've ever done. And I know that because after 2 days, there was a level of exhaustion that I felt that I had never felt before. They challenged us. We had to not defend our work specifically, but defend if we pushed back. They pushed back. And what it did was it taught us how to interact with those in power, whoever those stakeholders were. That was the year long. We had every 6 weeks or so, someone from DC would come down and meet with the state cohort. We would go through more training. It was intense. What we did when we were done, the expectation was you had a couple of priorities that you chose at the DC level. But what are you going to do when you come back to your state and how are you going to impact? Because the goal is not for us to bring you in and we just teach you this stuff. How are you going to change what's going on in your state? It was daunting. It was absolutely daunting. But I loved it.
I can only imagine. I think about that sometimes when you have really quality learning, how that thinking is so exhausting. And yet we ask our kids to sit and learn like this every day without that like break to time to process and all this kind of stuff. And if we can get to where it's meaningful learning, we may be needing to adjust our schedules.
I was just in Eminence, Kentucky, at Eminence Independent, at the high school. Mm-hmm. And they just went to a four-day week.
Did they really? Interesting.
Monday through Thursday, and Friday, an intervention day, catch up, that sort of stuff. So don't know how it'll work, but yeah, they just went to a four-day week.
That's kind of a good segue into the fact that Kentucky is really trying to do a lot of changing in education. And I know that you have been integrally involved in the Kentucky United We Learn effort. So could you let us know a little bit from your perspective? Is it a good idea? Are you happy it's happening? What do you think as far as the implementation is concerned?
It's definitely a good idea. My subcommittee for the United We Learn Council is Vibrant Learning, which is why I was in Eminence, because we're going on these site visits to see schools that we're tagging as innovative, because vibrant learning experiences is something that kids talked about a lot as far as feedback, because sit and get doesn't get it.
Yeah.
So innovation in that sense. So there's vibrant learning, and then there's a policy level, then there's assessment and accountability. All of these moving parts come together. Yes, I'm happy everything is happening. I don't know what the end game is going to be, because we know that we have that wild card that is our Kentucky legislature.
Yeah.
So much of what the commissioner wants to do is going to require assistance from the legislature, funding, amendment changes, repealing some things. We don't know what that, and I don't know what he would want to repeal, but all of that comes into play when it comes to the legislature. But as far as United We Learn, what the commissioner wants, I've never seen someone who understands that we do not have time to keep things as they are, who understands what equity is and does, who understands the importance of having everyone at the table to get this done. This is not siloed work. It can't be siloed work.
And yet education is typically very siloed.
Exactly. Right. Yeah. And that's why he's getting some pushback, because it's been siloed for so long. And they're like, well, can't we just keep things the way they were? And he's like, no, we cannot.
No,
we're not going to do that. We actually have our next big convening at the end of this month. It's going to be a 2-day meeting. We're going to debrief about some of the things that we've done, because we all had charges and we all had tasks. He has always said from the first meeting we had, he said, I need whatever your lens is. He said, I need you to look at this through another lens. So if you're a parent, think about it as a teacher or as a student or as an administrator or a community member. And he said, if you cannot do this, it will continue to be siloed and we won't do siloed work. So it's interesting. Some of the people who were there at the beginning are not anymore. Some say because I don't trust it, I don't think anything's going to change. And others because it's changing too quickly.
Too much. Yeah.
It's very interesting.
Well, and I noticed, I've actually been online myself, that all of these United We Learn committee meetings and whatnot are taped. So we as citizens can go in and listen in and be able to see and track exactly what is happening. So I would encourage people to check in on that, because this is a massive change. When that big container ship got caught in the canal during COVID.
Yeah.
I thought, you know, what an amazing analogy, because what worked was they tried everything that they'd always done and it was still stuck. They had to innovate and come up with new ways, and a lot of little changes were required to be able to move that ship, but they were finally able to move that ship. I see so many parallels with education.
Absolutely. And
it's not going to be instantaneous, but boy, there are some flashes of brilliance that are happening around our state right now.
There are. And it's interesting, because there are certain areas of the state who have flat out said, I don't think I want to be a part of that.
Yeah.
I won't identify them, but they're like, why? He can't force us to fill in the blank. And I'm like, well, technically he can, because if it's going to be a change in standards, or it's going to be a change in how you do things, our assessment and accountability, you're going to have to. But it's interesting to see what they're pushing back on.
You know, and that accountability piece is really what will make it sticky. All these efforts, we've had tons of things come through education, and it's like the initiative of the month. What are we going to try now?
And exactly.
Most of the time, we don't give it enough time to find out if it's even working before we're on to the next thing. And
right.
But this assessment and accountability piece is really important, because you get what you measure.
And that's it.
exactly what the schools are being held accountable for and everything else. What you're measuring for is what's important. And the skills that kids need today are not measured by the standardized tests that we're using.
Correct. And that's been a lot. I hate to bring them up again, but when the legislature passed Senate Bill 158, I could be wrong about the number, this is 2 years ago, they set those standards. They set the accountability indicators, and we couldn't figure out why they were doing that. So now at the elementary and middle school level, you have your usual, you know, you have your core subjects, but reading and math, a little bit higher, they're valued at more. And of course, you have social studies and science and writing, ambiguous as far as I'm concerned, and it's school climate, right? How do you measure that? Who's measuring? Because teachers could be extremely happy in their building, and yet the kids are not.
Exactly.
So there's that. Oh, and EL learners. How they determined that EL learners was an indicator now, I don't know. EL learners. So at high school, it's all of those plus graduation rate and college and career readiness. What does that mean? How do we measure that? Clearly, you can measure graduation rate because it's like, okay, 95%, whatever. But how many of them were on level? How many of them were prepared, even though they graduated? So that's why we had a problem with them determining this is how you indicate and assess and hold people accountable. Not so much. So that's what he's looking at. The commissioner thinks that this is portrait of a graduate push.
Yes.
Most of the districts have something. Bay County's had one for a while, and it's pretty strong. It's pretty strong. But what we're hearing is some are like, well, we don't necessarily want to embrace your version of a portrait of a graduate. We didn't say you had to. Most districts have their own. Now, the State Board of Education did adopt one, but they didn't say it's not mandated. But if you have a portrait of a graduate and it fits these criteria, then you're probably comprehensive and you're probably getting what you need, right? So we're trying to change. Even if we don't change assessment and accountability at the standardized test level, we can add some outside component and it can be a much more holistic approach to how we're assessing the kids and probably more accurate.
I agree with you completely. And it's not going to be as easy because it's real easy to do a bubble test and throw it through a computer and all that kind of stuff. And we're going to have to be more thoughtful about all of that. And so it's interesting as you spoke about the legislature and whatnot and the advocacy piece. It sounds to me like a massive educational advocacy program, like ready for the two of us to jump into. Who knows?
Yeah.
So I could talk to you all day about these kind of things, but tell me, what would you like decision makers, and be that administrators, be that KDE, be that legislators, be that voters, what would you like them to know?
That's a lot, Liza.
But you can pick one or two things, maybe.
Okay, I can. I think one thing I need people to hear, and this is, I tell people there are certain things that keep me up at night. When we speak of equity, those who push back and use, co-opt certain terms, weaponize it, right?
Yes.
This notion of, if I'm giving this group of kids what they need, I must be taking it from some other group of. And I get that a lot. We won't name them, but you have certain elementary schools in here who just, in Fayette County, who just have everything they need. Their test scores are beautiful. And then we have this elementary school over here who, because of their tax base, don't have equitable resources that this elementary school. So if we get together, we start saying, well, this school has it and this school does. Well, my children are not going to. I never said I was taking anything away from your child. What I'm saying is you need to raise over here what you're doing to equal what you have over there so that every child has the same resources. So I need people to understand what equity is and what equity is not. And that's,
and sometimes the
argument.
Resources that are needed in one school are different than the ones that are needed
Correct.
In another school.
Right.
And
which
that's
why I don't
okay.
want to take anything from you.
Because
yes.
it doesn't have to be. It's not pie. I mean,
it's not,
and frankly, I'm going to take it one step further and go, we have not been serving, according to our measurements, 50% of the kids that are out there. Okay. So obviously, it's a broken system that's not working. Mm-hmm. But I contend that we are not serving even the kids that work okay under the system that we've got.
Right.
Because we're not giving them the skills that they need. We're giving them the industrial model. Okay, let's sit down, be compliant, and be a factory worker sorts of skills.
Yeah.
I'm so glad you brought that up, because it's not about who gets what. It's about what kids need.
Mm-hmm.
Each kid is going to have a slightly different situation.
And that's why it's about equity, not equality.
Yes. And I was president at one of those schools that had all the resources that they needed. But do you know that there was a good percentage of people that did not fit in that system?
Mm-hmm.
It did not serve those kids well. And so even the tops of the top had problems that needed to be solved. Their typical system applied did not work.
Agreed.
I agree with you. And I'm so glad you bring that up, because it's not about taking from one kid and giving to another. It's about meeting each kid where they are and finding a way to help them to flourish and to blossom.
There's nothing wrong with acknowledging that the resources are not there. See, because it's easy to say, well, these teachers don't teach hard enough. Okay, sure. Well, that's what you have to say to make yourself sleep at night. That's fine. But kids, when you take away free and reduced lunch programs, when you take away transportation funding, when Frankfurt decides we're going to stop funding, we're going to take a little bit more from public education every session, and then you only have it funded at like 65%, but then you go and say you blame the schools.
Oh, yeah.
You haven't done enough. Can you give us that, what we need? I'm just silly that way. I know. I get it. So that's what I need people to know. I need people to understand a lot of the equity issues stem from a lack of funding. If public education were fully funded, imagine what we could do. But we have to fight every year to make sure. And not only, we can't even keep the status quo. They're still cutting programs. That's what I need people to know, which in essence means I need people to fight and say fully fund education. But that's another conversation.
Yeah, but you know what? It's a really great way to conclude this, is to talk to your legislator. Let them hear from their constituents, because that's what's important to them. Yep. Wherever you are, pick up the phone and say, can I come in and have a little conversation with you about education and why it's a priority and what's actually really needed there?
Yes.
Because it's obvious that that's not what's happening, given the types of bills that have been presented.
Right. And coming from the Education Committee, anyway, very few of those bills have anything to do with education. If someone does want to speak to their legislator about education, my advice is when you make that appointment, you share your story.
Mm-hmm.
Personal stories and personal anecdotes are what they will listen to.
Absolutely.
It's what they listen to. Share your, I mean, when we just had LegCon, you know, National PTA Legislative Convention a few weeks ago. And every one of us that met with a legislator, we shared our personal story. And then we were able to relate it back to a bigger issue that relates to all kids. It tends to make them listen more. You won't always, of course, get what you want, but at least they'll listen. They'll go, oh, and then maybe you have that relationship. You know what? I had that. My cousin had that similar situation. Whatever. Personal stories matter. And that's why that why is important.
I listened to a TED Talk this week by a neuroscientist that talked about how decisions are made. And she said that if you examine what happens in the brain, all decisions are made emotionally. And then people rationalize back as to why they're making a decision the way they're making it.
Absolutely.
Which is why stories are so powerful.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I thought, you know, gosh, that makes so much sense.
So much sense. Yep.
So much sense. Make it relatable, et cetera. So we need to help them rationalize differently, I guess.
Yeah, bless them.
Oh, Penny, is there anything else that we haven't talked about that you'd love to get out here?
I do want to say, this is not a PTA thing, although it's in alignment with a lot of things PTA does. If you have not read Beyond the Bake Sale, I suggest you read it. Beyond the Bake Sale by Ann Henderson and Karen Mapp. We consider it our Bible in terms of what family engagement and partnerships look like in schools. Two things I really like about it is it tells you specifically that the onus is on the schools to build these relationships. And it is. They need to reach out to you. They need to do the adjusting. You don't adjust. You are who you are. Your situation is what your situation is. They adjust to meet you where you are, as you are. And the second thing is, in the book, they talk about the four types of partnerships that exist. What the first is the fortress school, which doesn't allow you in any way. They don't want you there. They tell you, nope, we got the kids. Just come get at the end of the day. Everything will be fine. That's your fortress school. And the fourth school is a partnership school. And that's what everyone strives to have. You want that in every school in your district where they're welcoming. They understand partnership. You have this ability to be seen and to be heard. It's two things that we use a lot in our trainings and when we discuss family engagement. So I do suggest Beyond the Big by Karen Mapp and Ann Henderson. It's a wonderful, wonderful way to get your foot in the door and to start that whole notion of how do I partner successfully with our schools.
I'll put a link to the book in our show notes for today so that you can go there and I'll throw in PTA and maybe Ed Trust committee as well.
Please.
So, because those could all be really good resources.
Yeah, EdTrust is amazing. You can get lost on that website. I mean, it's just it's great.
Data.
It's great.
That's excellent. Well, Ms. Penny Christian, thank you so much for taking your time today and so much for all that you do for kids.
I appreciate it. Thank you, Liza.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Education Perspectives. Feel free to share your thoughts on our Facebook page. Let us know which education perspectives you would like to hear or share. Please subscribe and share with your friends.